What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Psych Athletes Podcast. I know I've kept you waiting. I haven't uploaded in a while, but today is pretty special. Professional NASCAR racer Amber Balkan is hopping on the pod with me to discuss confidence, consistency, and self-development. Amber Balkan is a Canadian professional stock car racing driver. She competes full-time in the ARCA Menard Series, driving the number 30 Ford Fusion for Retta Jones Racing, and she is most known for being the first Canadian woman to win a NASCAR-sanctioned race in the United States. Amber is a trailblazer in every sense of the word, not just for women in NASCAR, but for female athletes all over the world, and we are about to have an awesome conversation. All Amber's socials are in the description, so you can go ahead and follow her on her NASCAR journey. Amber will be racing in the General Tire 200 at Talladega Super Speedway on April 23rd, and that will be airing on Fox, so make sure you guys go check that out. Just a reminder that if you're interested in one-on-one mindset training, you can go ahead and schedule a session below. Remember to follow Psych Athletes on Instagram if you haven't already. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and enjoy the episode. What's going on, guys? It's Ryan here, back with another episode, and I have Amber Balkan, one of the 124 women NASCAR drivers to ever compete. What's up, Amber?
There's 124 of us that have competed. I'm surprised.
Okay. See, that's another thing you should probably fact check for me, because I found that on Wikipedia too. But
maybe in like all of NASCAR history and of all the levels, but that's pretty cool. I didn't know that.
Is that less than you thought or more than you thought?
Way more than I thought. Because right now at the top series of NASCAR, there are no female racers. Danica Patrick retired a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And then there's one part-time Xfinity. There's one full-time in the truck series, and there's me and one other female in the ARCA Menard series. So there's four of us, I think five of us, you know, in the top series. So that's why I thought it'd be less.
One out of five female competitors in the top series. It's so cool. I'm so stoked. Amber hopped on. She's actually recommended, and I just learned from one of her drivers, and I reached out to her. I'm like, hey, you want to hop on the podcast? Super nervously, and Amber decided to come on and share her perspective on mental health and performance in NASCAR. So I'm really excited because, like, I talk to so many people, and people come up to me with such, like, different sports. When I first started the podcast, I had, like, the three traditional American sports in mind, like football, basketball, baseball. And people come up to me, like, cricket, grappling, rugby, soccer, and soccer, but like other sports that I had no idea like it appealed to, and NASCAR I guess is one of them too, and I'm super stoked about that. It just shows the growth of the podcast and of, you know, the awareness of mental health and performance in sport in general. So Amber, why don't you give us a little bit about yourself and your story, how you came to kind of appreciate mental health and performance in not only the sports world as a whole, but in your perspective as being like one of the only women to compete in NASCAR.
Yeah, so I'm from Canada. I now live in North Carolina. I moved here around 6 years ago. Basically, if you want to be a NASCAR driver, you have to move to North Carolina. NASCAR headquarters is here. All the race teams are here. So this is the spot to be. How I like to describe it is, if you want to be a movie star, you move to Hollywood. If you want to be a, you know, a country singer, you move to Nashville. If you want to be a NASCAR driver, you move to North Carolina. So I started racing at 10 years old. I've literally been going to the racetrack since I've been in my mom's belly. My parents met at the racetrack, so I'm a third generation race car driver, but we're working to get there. So this has been my dream, and I'm super grateful to finally be here.
That's so cool. So you're like you called yourself a racetrack baby? Is that what you said?
Yeah, well, yeah, I didn't even think of that. Yeah,
because did you not say that? I just coined that term.
But I am, because my parents met at the racetrack and got married, had me, and I've been going to the track since I've been in my mom's belly. So that's all I know. It's literally in my blood.
That's awesome. So it's been really like that culture has been like ingrained in you forever, basically.
For sure.
And do you think that has like an impact on maybe like the stress and the pressure? And not only that, it's like sponsorship is a huge part of NASCAR. Mm-hmm. You need to have money in order to compete. And I did want to talk about like the struggles and the stress and the pressure that like comes with that. You know what I mean? Because like it's not like any other sport. You know, you have to be good enough, and then you have to get the money. You have to get the backing. And I've read a couple articles about, you know, kind of the struggles that women go through in order to receive that funding. Can you tell me, like, it's super impressive that how you mentioned that you raised all that money by yourself. And I've read somewhere that you're like a one woman business, I think, in one of your interviews. So I did do a little bit of research.
Yeah.
and you're super sick and really driven. Can you tell me how that, like, kind of sponsorship and that funding aspect, on top of having to perform at the top level, like, does that affect your mental health in any way? Or, like, do you have any added stress or pressures because of that?
Absolutely. My biggest challenge in my entire racing career has been the lack of financial backing. And I moved to North Carolina 5 years ago, and I'm here on an athlete visa. So that means I cannot make any other money other than racing cars. So, like, I have to make this work. And there was about 3 to 4 years where I was in and out of the seat. So I moved here in 2016. That's when I became the first Canadian female to win a NASCAR sanction race in the USA. It was my first year ever, like, in NASCAR on pavement in stock cars. I won, and I was like, my career is going to pop off. Like, this is great. And it didn't. I thought the sponsors were going to come rolling in, and they didn't. And basically, the next 3 years after that, I was in and out of the seat, like, part-time racing, because I couldn't find a sponsor big enough to put me full-time racing and put me up to that next level. And those 3-4 years of part-time racing were the hardest years of my life, because there was so much mental struggle knowing that I came here to chase this dream and I'm not fulfilling that dream right now. Like, not only am I not getting to race, but I'm broke. I'm lonely. I don't have my family. I don't have friends. Like, I'm in this new country that, like, I, you know, don't know anyone in. And the hardest part was just not racing. Like, all I wanted to do was race. And the fact that the only thing stopping me was that I didn't have the finances to race was really, really difficult. And I got into severe depression. It was like an up and down road for like 3 to 4 years, because I just worked and worked and worked. And it was one of those things, is like, is all this work for nothing? Am I doing this all for nothing? And I just couldn't figure out why things weren't happening for me. And that's actually really when I dug into my mental health and dug into my mental toughness. And I started reading tons of books, like a lot of self-development books, mental edge books, athletic mindset books. And once I started really, like, digging in deep of, okay, how do we get Amber to become a better person in general, not just a better race car driver? Because right now I can't go on the track, and because in NASCAR, it costs tens of thousands of dollars just to practice. So it's not even like I could keep developing my skills on the track, because it costs money to do that. So I was literally just sitting there hoping, wishing I could be in a race car, but not being in a race car. And so I think that's when kind of my mental health game, like, turned up. And I was like, all right, I'm going all in on, like, my self-development, and I'm just going to become the best at everything else in life that I can do, and hope that racing follows. And and it worked. Like, honestly, I don't think I would be where I am if it wasn't for the work that I put into my mental health, because I had to be right up here before I could be right on the track. Because when I did have those few opportunities to be in the car, I put so much pressure on myself, because I would only have a couple of them a year, that I would end up tanking. Because, like, it would start good, and I'll put so much pressure on myself, and then I would tank. And then as soon as I just, like, went back to, hey, why did you start doing this, Amber? You did it to have fun. Once I went back to enjoy it, have fun, like, this is why you're doing it, that's when the results started coming, and sponsorship started coming, and things started working out.
Yeah. You just gave me, like, dude, you touched on so many things. You touched on, like, six, like, key aspects of mental health and performance right there. You mentioned the mental roller coaster, kind of when you had all the confidence in the world, you just came off that win, and you're like, holy shit, my career is about to pop off, like you said, and then it doesn't, and then your confidence takes a hit, and then people always talk about, like, failure being something, like, you have to bounce back from, you just got to grind through it, and you got to push through it, right? And then you reach that point, and, like, and you keep, like, digging in and working and working. It leads to burnout, leads to more pressure, leads to more anxiety. You know, it's not until we kind of focus on that self-development and get back to the root reasons as to why we play. You mentioned having fun, you mentioned working on yourself, and then the results will come instead of the results first. And such a results oriented, like NASCAR is so results oriented, money oriented. Like, yes, that is so huge. And that's something that I love to talk about, like the self-development aspect of it. Like, self-development and performance are not like mutually exclusive things. Mm-hmm. You know, you can work on yourself. If you learn to become comfortable with your thoughts and your insecurities and like the self-doubt and kind of learn how to manage all of those things and improve like your confidence off the racing track, then you can improve it on the racing track. Those things aren't mutually exclusive. And even if they were, like, you did all the right things. You know what I mean? You worked on yourself. And I think that was so huge. Just becoming a better person. I really, really love that. And like the mental roller coaster aspect, because people always tell you like those like motivational videos. I had a conversation with a volleyball player on the podcast a while ago, and the majority of reaction like is to like push through stress, fear, failure, and just grind through it. But it's sometimes the opposite of that. It's sometimes taking a rest. It's taking like days for your mental health. It's working on yourself. It's working on the intangibles, the things that aren't related to sport, in order to improve like your mental health and all of that. You know, I think that's so huge. I want to talk about like specific, like what was, when you were researching like self-development, you read a lot of books and you were focused on your mental health. And you were focused on, you know, improving your, you know, confidence, self-worth, whatever it might have been off the track. Mm-hmm. Like, what were those like key things that you learned were crucial? What were those kind of like maybe techniques that you've learned, or like ideas or methods, coping techniques, stuff like that?
Yeah, I think it all boils down to consistency and confidence. And if you can really master those two things, I think it kind of falls into place with everything else. And I think that if the only way you can truly build confidence is by doing hard things, is through being consistent with your daily habits and your daily activities and through action. And last year, it was over a year ago now, I decided to do 75 hard. If you're not familiar with 75 hard, it is a mental toughness program that was built by the CEO of First Form, which is a supplement company that I'm sponsored by. And essentially for 75 days straight, you follow a diet, have no cheat meals, work out twice a day. It has to be minimum 45 minute workout. One of them has to be outside. Drink a gallon of water a day, read 10 pages of self-development book a day, take a progress picture. I feel like I'm missing something, but that was the general outline of it. And I did that and I completed it. And the entire purpose of this program is to build confidence, self-worth, grit, mental toughness, and just so you feel unstoppable. And I wanted to feel that way. And I did it. And within day 23 of the program was when I signed the biggest sponsor I ever signed. After that, like, I had a full season of racing. Now I'm going into what my ultimate dream was to race in the ARC Menards years, to be able to race at a national level of NASCAR. And it's just, now I live my day like that. Like, I live my day as 75 hard. And I think it's just making that commitment to yourself that you are not going, things aren't an option. You're going to get them done. And that's going to give you confidence, because to know that you can do that. And just putting the work into yourself, it's like law of attraction. The more the like attracts like. And when you are just on top of your stuff and you feel good about it and you're positive and you're, you know, making good connections with people and real relationships, and you have the right intention behind you, you have the right mindset behind you, and you just want to do good and be good and see other people succeed and just like have all that good stuff and good energy around you, like, it just keeps attracting better things into your life. And like, I think that when you get really low, when you're not happy, when you're depressed, that's when the jealousy comes out. That's when like all these ugly things come out of you. And once you learn to heal yourself, you all of a sudden you don't feel jealous. You're happy for people and you don't like, everything just keeps getting better the more you put into yourself. You're better to other people. And I think that's the one of the biggest things I've learned is you have to do hard things and go through hard things to build mental toughness. You have to be consistent with your promises to yourself and just be consistent with it all, because I think consistency is key.
Yeah, it's so interesting hearing everybody's like different perspectives on, you know, what makes them tick. For you, it's that consistency, it's that like level of motivation, and that doing good, those like that, those good feelings and good vibes and like the law of attraction and everything coming like, for you. Because you're right, when we eliminate all the external factors and we remain consistent to ourselves, like consistent to our commitments, and we're not worried about, you know, what other people might think
or no,
the results like that,
exactly. Yeah,
then we start to see success because of it. But when we start rooting for people, like for me, my biggest like regret in my sport was rooting for other people to fail, because I was behind some people and I wanted to be in that spot. I wanted to even spot
there.
And I thought like that was the only way that I would get my opportunity, which it's really easy to fall into that trap. It's really easy to think like that. It's really easy to give in to the external factors. But like the hardest part is just reminding yourself that you have to just do you. You have to just focus on yourself. And that's so
exactly.
You touch, like every time you speak, you touch on so many, like you're well learned and like you have a good grasp on, you know, the fundamentals of sports psychology and like and taking care of yourself and like what is going to bring an athlete success, and you have a good grasp on that. So I really don't have anything else to add, because every time you talk, you just check all the boxes and it's really awesome. It's like everything that I ever talk about on this podcast, and I think that's really cool. It's always great when I get like-minded people on here. I'm gonna have to bring someone that really wholeheartedly disagrees with what I talk about in order have like
to challenge you a little bit.
Have a spicy conversation. But yeah, it's great. I wanted to talk about NASCAR. It's male dominated, but I think what's really cool about NASCAR is it's co-ed, and women compete with men, and I think that's super sick. And that kind of is like like when you think about NASCAR, you like think about all the stereotypes about it and the audience about it, and when you look into it, like just at a first glance and you see that it's coded, it's like that's the only sport to be doing that right now at a professional level.
Yeah.
And I think it's really cool. So I wanted to talk about how like how progressive is NASCAR? How does it entertain the concept of diversity, of health, mental health and performance? Like what's the idea surrounding those things, and is there a lot of awareness going on, or is that still a struggle?
Yeah, NASCAR has come such a long way, and I am truly grateful to be in a sport that men and women can compete at the same level. Like I do think that is so cool, and I'm very grateful that I can be a part of a sport like that. And as far as the progression of NASCAR, these last, I would say, 3 to 4 years, NASCAR has went above and beyond to not only say what they were going to do, but back it up with action. And they have made the sport way more inclusive. They brought this entirely new fan base in it. And I honestly think NASCAR is almost coming a little bit mainstream because of it, which is kind of neat. But yeah, they banned the Confederate flag to, you know, have everyone feel really welcoming to the NASCAR races, as far as because there are different races in the sport and there are different genders in the sport. And we have a NASCAR diversity program. I actually was a part of that program, and that's what got me introduced to NASCAR, because my background is dirt track racing. I was a local dirt track, like hobby on weekends type of thing. And I was winning races, and the NASCAR diversity program called me and said, hey, what do you think of NASCAR? So they do a lot for diversity in the sport. They do a lot for inclusion. And I think it's been so progressive these last couple of years. I mean, we have Michael Jordan owning teams. We have Pitbull owning teams. Like, it is so cool. So, yeah, I think that the best thing about NASCAR is when you put that helmet on, the car doesn't know if you're a woman. It doesn't know if you're a person of color. It doesn't know any of that. It just knows there's a driver in there. And I always tell, you know, whether it be people of color or females or any type of anyone who's diversity of some sort. I always say, take the gender, take the race completely out of the equation and just focus on being a driver, focus on being the best driver you can be, focus on developing your skills, your mindset, and everything it takes just to be a great race car driver.
Yeah, you have an interesting take on that, just being a woman in NASCAR, like, kind of when you get in that seat and you put on that helmet, it's just about competing at that point on. And I could see if I could see a lot of, like, people, if they got that opportunity, they can might use that like as and use that as like extra stress or pressure and like this chip on their shoulder and like want to prove other people wrong. But you seem to like have a good grasp on that, like that's not going to bring you like success worrying about those things. It's all coming back to eliminating the external factors.
Yeah, I think there were definitely times in my career that I felt more like that. But I think right now I'm just so locked into like who I am. Like I almost feel like I'm in like a little bubble and I'm just really focused on what I need to do to be prepared for the races and to perform and execute on the races. You know, where before I was so results driven and just cared about what people thought and like I didn't want to not do well and people go, oh, she's a girl, of course she's not going to do well. Or, and now I just focus on what I need to do as a race car driver. And you know, the thing about racing is results don't always speak for the truth of what the race happened, because there's so many variables in racing. You can get a flat tire, someone can crash you out, you get a pit road penalty, like I mean there's all these different factors that can make you from winning or losing. Unlike I mean I guess with football and stuff, you get the wrong call or something like that can change the outcome of the game. But there's so many external factors that as long as I know I'm progressing every race, I'm executing on what I need to do, my team's happy, I'm happy with my progression, then I know that I'm on the right track. But of course I want to win races. Yeah,
exactly. That's all the intention, right? Like we always win. We always want to succeed. Yeah. But there's so many things that can happen within any match, any race. And there's literally no
that's out point. Of our control.
Exactly. Yeah. And there's literally no point in worrying about it. A lot of athletes that I work with, I teach them, like, there's this good Mark Jackson or Phil Jackson quote, Chicago Bulls coach. He's like, put yourself in the best possible position to succeed. Like, eliminate the external factors and let go of the outcome. Like, the ride is a lot more fun that way. And that is so true in sports. It's like
it's honestly hard, because I have told myself that for like years now, and there's still times where I'm like, okay, you gotta get to top five, you gotta get top five, and like I'm so, and I'm like, no, you can't focus on the outcome, you have to focus on executing, being present, doing what you need to do in the car at that time, because when you do that, then the results come. But it's so easy to say and hard to do.
That's why mental performance, it's like it's not like a quick fix. Like we're not gonna say anything on this podcast that you probably already don't already know. It's about staying consistent to it. It's about taking it to heart. Yeah. It's about battling that thought, like that results thought. It's like it's such a tedious process. Like those negative thoughts that enter your brain, those results oriented thoughts that enter your brain. And you literally have to counter those thoughts with like, you can't do that every single time. Because that's what it takes in order to adopt that mindset. There's things that you can do and there's things that you can learn, but that's what it all comes down to. And I love how you say, like, it's so hard to not think about that. You're a professional race car driver at the top level of your sport, and you're going through that exact same thought process, like trying to battle those thoughts all the time, just like all the athletes that are listening at home. Like, it's such a big thing, and you're not alone in it. Like, we're all fighting that struggle.
And it's not only the negative, but the positive too. Like when I'm doing really well and I get overexcited and I lose my focus, it's like it goes both ways. And so I think a good kind of tip for people that also struggle with this is to have a cue word for yourself or cue phrase. So for me, it is be smooth, because like I know if I'm just focusing on being really smooth in the car, then I'm good. Another thing that like going forward, like because my last race didn't work out well, and so I'm like always really taking apart, like deconstructing it, okay, what can I do moving forward so that doesn't happen again and we can be better. And it is to tell my spotter to tell me to have fun, tell me to be smooth, and tell me to breathe before the race starts. Just little keywords. And then if I ever get excited or mad or whatever, if I'm not leveling out my emotions, then my keyword will be smooth. But I think everyone could kind of have their own keyword or cue phrase to help kind of get them refocused.
Exactly. Dude, you're so good at this. Like, that's like, it's so crazy. Every time I bring someone on, I'm so surprised by everybody. You're so articulate in the way you word things, and I'm having a lot of fun right now, and I really appreciate it. I love the mental cues, and I love the fact that you address not getting too overly excited. That's super easy to do. Just like how we can get super down on ourselves and let that spiral, we can get too excited. We can start getting antsy, and we can start like not controlling ourselves and not being, you know, present in the moment. And then we start thinking about, oh my God, I'm going to win this race, or oh my God, I'm going to bat 300, or oh my God, we're going to win this game by 20, like stuff like that. Like you can lose that sense of focus, and you bring up like mental cues. So huge. Like anything that brings you back to your roots and brings you back to the present moment, like anything at all, like my whole thing would just be like be calm. Like that would be my whole thing. Like everybody's is different, and it's those mental cues that like help you center yourself and put you in the moment. Just having that like pathway associated with that. Do you do any meditation at all? Is that something that you have looked into?
Yeah, I do. It's something that I want to do more of because I don't do it that often. But like visualization is pretty similar to meditation. I find that a little easier to do for me and more beneficial. It's a super similar idea though. But yeah, I was doing it regularly, like 10 minutes a day. I've fallen off a little bit, but I want to get back to it because I do think it's really great. And the thing with athletes in general is like, we always focus so much on our physical exercise when we need to be working on our mental exercise just as much. So that's why, like, in my morning routine, I read 10 pages a day still every day, just to like, I journal every day. Like, I still try to keep my mental good because I know if my mental's good, then everything else will follow.
Yeah, you touched on it right there. Like, it's not as sexy as working like on your game.
No,
it's not as fun. Like, it's tedious, it's a battle. But like, the top performers, like, you understand, like, everyone that's listening to this podcast right now, like this episode right now, they understand like the top performers, like at the top levels of their game, like work on their mental, they work on their mental health, they work on their mental performance. They have mental cues. They work on different things. Like there's 1,000 different mental performance techniques that you can use to solve any given solution. It's all about finding which works for you. And it seems like you like visualization. I'm working with an athlete right now who really loves visualization, has a super vivid imagination. Like he loves it and it really works for him. So like, if you're listening at home, like find that technique that works for you. Like it's not a black and white kind of thing. Can you tell me about like how you visualize and like maybe some tips that you might have? Like what's your process when you do it? And how does it help?
Well, I think if you've never visualized before, I would say like I've read so many books on visualization, and like there's the thing about all the books I read when it comes to like athletic performance or like mental edge performance, like it's all of them pretty much say the same stuff. It's just kind of worded a little different and they use different phrases or different words, but it has the same meaning. And so with visualization, you know, some people call it imagery or, but essentially what it is you're looking at yourself playing your sport, doing your sport from absolutely every angle, from the bird's eye view angle, from you being in it. Like for me, it would be sitting in the car, like feeling the pedals, feeling the steering wheel, feeling my gloves on me, like feeling the belts tight on me, like almost like feeling the heat of my helmet and like the weight of my helmet, and then just like seeing the track and how it's going to maneuver. For me, like my whole goal up until this year was just to get to race at Daytona International Speedway. And I achieved that this year. And I literally visualized standing on the grid at Daytona, listening to the anthem for years, like years. And like it happened, you know? So if you can see it before it happens, if you can create it in your mind, then it becomes familiar. So then when you are in that activity, it's like, oh, I've already done this. I've already been here before. So it's easier when you're actually performing it. So I think just for visualization, just act as if you are doing it at that moment and feel, hear, touch if you can, like smell, like absolutely every sense you can think about it and use that. And then I think sometimes I'll visualize just like racing, like in a race or race day. Sometimes I'll just visualize like what I want my life to look like walking up to a beautiful home that I'm like walking, you know, a nice car while I'm walking up with, you know, healthy groceries in my hand and walking, like just like it can, I think visualization can be productive in a lot of different ways. It's just more of make sure they're always positive visualizations. You don't want to ever visualize anything negative or bad outcomes. You just want only good and positive visualizations.
And it's key, guys, when you're doing it, not to put too much pressure on yourself. Cause like when I know a lot of people, including me, when I had visualize, like sometimes I would visualize myself striking out, and I'd be like, why did I just do that? Like, it'd just be something.
You can't do that.
You can't do that, but it sometimes it gets hard. So you have to be you have to go easy on yourself a little bit, understand that it's a process to get good at it. And the five senses,
100%.
You touched 100%. On all of it. And it does a bunch of things. Like you mentioned, it gives you that confidence in that moment. You've been in that situation before. It's going to help you perform in games, but it's also going to give you the confidence to pursue like those visualizations. It's like a form of manifestation.
Exactly. I was just going to say, it's almost like, all right, I've seen it. So I know I can achieve that. Like, I know that that's possible now because I can fully see that. And I think with visualization, it's like anything that you're not good at first. Like, I'm still not good at visualization, but I bet I'm way better than I used to be. It was same with reading. Like, it would take me like an hour to read 10 pages. Now I like fly through books, but it's taken me a while. Like, you're not, just because you're not good at something doesn't mean you can't get good at it or can't get better. So if you're listening, you're like, oh, like I would never like do any of that. I don't want to read. I don't want to manifest. I don't want to like visualize. I don't want to do any of that. It's like, just try it. It's going to be tough, but just keep trying. It's the same thing as working out, you know, like if you want to get in shape, you're not going to get in shape after two or three workouts. You need to consistently do it over and over and over. And it's going to get easier as you do it.
Yeah, dude, it's a skill. Like, it's just like in sports, like it's a skill that must be honed and trained in order to reap the results from it. Like, that's what we're talking about here. Your mind is a muscle. All that stuff.
Exactly.
Before.
Yeah.
Awesome. I did want to ask you, I know you're short on time, but I wanted to ask you a couple more things. You race. So how many laps are your races typically? Like, how many laps?
So it depends on the size of track. So Daytona, we did 80 laps because we did 200 miles. It was a 2.5 mile track. So when we go to a shorter tracks, so we'll do like 150 laps. Our Phoenix race is 150 laps. So anywhere usually between 75 and like 200 laps, they usually last around an hour and a half to 2 hours we're in the cars for. So it's, and that's an hour and a half to 2 hours of fully concentrated focus that entire time. There are no breaks. There are no, like, we're going 200 miles an hour for 2 hours straight. Like, so the amount of focus it takes is insane.
So how do you do it?
So that's why I work on my mental so much, you know. Like, it's one thing to be able to run for 2 hours or anything, but to like be focused, completely focused on hitting your marks perfectly every single corner, every single lap, managing the gap between you and the speed and the I'm going to Talladega next, so the drafting, managing the air, like it's a lot at once while still physically being exhausted because you're in a 140 degree car with no air conditioning and three layers of fireproof suits and stuff. So yeah,
I used to have the most narrow view on the most difficult sports, and you just basically like in 30 seconds like changed my perspective, and that's insane. Like, if you want to be the best at that, you have to be like on your game, focused, locked in, in that
for like
flow
2 state hours.
For 2 hours
straight.
That's
like, it's not like you get to go to a bench, have a sip of water, and then get back on it. It's like, no, you're locked in for 2 hours straight.
All right, so what do you do? What are your like mental kind of techniques? What are your strategies, your coping mechanisms? Maybe you start.
I think just like being present, being in the moment, that's honestly the biggest thing. And then just the cues, like be smooth, be calm. Like, I try to say to myself, like, calmness is my superpower. Like, I'm like really good at being calm. So, which I am good at being calm, but when shit goes bad, but sometimes I get excited when shit goes good. So I need to level that down too. That was my mistake at the last race. I was passing a bunch of cars, it was going really good. I got too excited and went into the corner too hard. So, it takes like a millimeter of a mess up to just ruin your day completely in racing. So
that's horrible. Like, that's like a tiny margin of error, and all of a sudden you're out of it, and you just
you prep so much for these races, and it can be gone like that.
So you have to really have mental fortitude, and you have to have that strength, and it's not something some people are inherently good at being able to manage things like that, manage really harsh setbacks, like you mentioned before, you had all the confidence in the world when you were you just mentioned, you got a little too excited in your race and messing up and then getting out of the race. Like the mental impact that has on you.
It took me three, four days to get over it. And I was like, I need to get over this and move past it and just focus on the next race. But yeah, it's hard when you prepare so much for something. And then I think it was lap 6 that happened out of 150 laps. So it was just, I was bad at myself.
Yeah. So not only are we becoming aware of mental health and performance strategies for the sake of performance, we're also becoming aware of these things for the sake of our well-being and being able to maintain that level of motivation and get back in it and be able to deal with failure appropriately and mm-hmm. beneficially as well, because there's a lot of things you can take from failure. But it's such a cliche when people say you have to learn how to fail. Failure is so important into getting better, but nobody tells you how to do it. Right.
Yeah.
And then when it does happen to you, you don't listen to any of that advice. You know what I mean? And when, just like how we're talking about, don't care about results when in the heat of competition, we don't listen to those things. So it's
Of course we want to win. Yeah.
Exactly. Your mind is like a muscle and you have to train it to be able to do these things that we're talking about, through these techniques that we're talking about. One last thing, two last things. you mentioned that your driver trainer, was it?
Yeah. So my, so he's my physical trainer, but we do a lot of all the workouts I do with him are very driver specific. And then we do a lot of sensory work as well. So a lot of peripheral work and we have this thing called Synaptech and I don't know how to explain it.
Yeah, I saw your your neck exercise.
We do the neck exercise, but we also do a lot of sensory work because there's so much information being put at us in those cars, because not only are we racing and doing our thing, but we have our spotters in our ears. We have to be able to feel what the car's doing to communicate that to our crew chiefs. So and then know all what's going on around us too. So we work on our sensory a lot so that I know what's happening if there's cars going by me. I know what's happening in front of me. I know what's happening behind me, all while focusing on my line. So back to the driver trainer. So I call him my driver trainer because he has driver specific workouts that include the sensory. And so went after Phoenix was my last race, and I told him about how mad I was at myself for messing up. And that's when he was like, oh, listen to this pressure podcast. And then he sent me the link to your podcast. So yeah.
That's so funny. That's cool. But I wanted to touch on that because you kind of, you were more diversity focused when you answered this question before, but I wanted to touch on the idea of awareness of mental health and performance in the NASCAR culture between fellow athletes, between maybe the fans and the audience. Is that something that's growing in awareness? Are you progressing in the right direction, or is there still that kind of barrier there?
Yeah, absolutely. So there wasn't before at all. And then a couple of years, it always takes someone speaking out, right? So a couple of years ago, I think it was actually Bubba Wallace who spoke out about it. And then Ty Dillon also spoke up about it, about dealing with depression and battling with that. And I've talked about it too. I just am not on as big of stage as they are. But yeah, I kind of have dealt with mental health issues my whole life. And so depression is something I've always dealt with, but my life is really great right now. I'm really happy in life, but I feel like I got a really good hold on my mental health now, but I know that it can come up at any time. But mental health issues are a real thing. Depression is a real thing. Anxiety is a real thing. And when it came to overcoming all that, it was really just about working on myself and just doing everything I could to make myself feel good, feel confident, and be ready. Because you don't have any motivation when you feel like crap. you know, you, it's hard to have discipline when you feel like crap, but I think discipline ultimately leads to confidence. And when you're confident in who you are, you're more motivated to keep going, keep building, keep learning.
That was a big thing I struggled with during COVID. After I retired from my sport, like I never got to mourn the death of my sport. Like, it ended super abruptly. I didn't go back for my fourth year, and I experienced depression for the first time in my life. And it's not something that's like you wake up one day. You sometimes we expect, like, when we're going through it, to wake up one day and just be like, oh, I'm good, or like, I'll never get out of this, or like, thoughts like that. It's like a super slow process, and it's like those little baby steps that we take, and those, and that self-development and that self-improvement, and and like, when we start to take our focus away from the results, like you said before, and we start to focus on more of ourselves and being happy outside of sports, learning how to separate our sports life and our life, like,
That's a big thing that I went through as well. Like, I had an identity crisis because I'm like, well, if I'm not Amber the race car driver, then who am I? Like, what is my purpose? What is my worth? Like who? And I think that was a big part of it. And I think a lot of athletes struggle with that, is like, if I'm not playing this sport and I'm not, you know, a race car driver, I'm not a football player, like, who am I? And what do I do? And what do I, so I definitely went through that as well, like, when I was going through my hard times. And that's why working on yourself and like knowing that you can be capable in other areas, it just makes you feel better, so that, you know, if, when sports does end one day, and I totally believe that, like, athletes die twice, once when they retire and their sport, and then when they actually die, because it's hard. Yeah, I think just, again, just going back to like doing all the work on yourself and like what I've built as a business now, like, I get a lot of confidence from that, so that when I know racing's done, I've learned so many skills. I've built so much mental toughness. I've built business skills. I've built relationship skills, communication skills. I've built all these different skills that I know I can use towards something else when racing is over. But I still don't like to think about that yet.
Yeah, nobody does. I never like to think, like, my last year, I was like, I'm never gonna stop playing.
Yeah,
it's never gonna happen to me. And that's fine. Like, you're, especially if you're young and you're an athlete, you don't have to care about like what you have to do next, and you're still competing. Like, it's fine. Don't put pressure on yourself to like have to do things after your sport. Enjoy the sport right now. Enjoy the moment you have.
Yeah.
But you touched on strong athletic identity. You're super aware. It's honestly crazy. And you touched on, like, especially for you, you had a super strong athletic identity. You, a racetrack baby, and your parents went on the racetrack, and you've been doing it your entire life. And once you start to get, have that self-doubt creep into your mind, and you're not performing, you're like, what am I worth? You know what I mean? And it's so important. And yeah, go on.
I was just like, I was so afraid of being a failure. And like, when I was going through that, I was like, I came here and now I'm a failure. I failed. I don't want to be a failure. And that, like, a part of that though is did what pushed me to keep going. Cause I'm like, I did not come this far to only come this far. You know, like, I did not go through all of this shit to not come out on top. Like, the best success stories are people that were dragged through the dirt and were at the lowest of the low places and came out of it. And I need to be that story. Like, I need to come out of this. So I think that was a driving force of what helped me like overcome it. But definitely, and I think now, like, when it is time to retire, be done, I'll be way more okay with it, because it's more so going out on my terms, hopefully. But no, the whole like identity crisis with being an athlete, that's a real thing for sure.
Like, that's so key. And I always talk about strong athletic identity in like kind of a negative light. But there are beneficial aspects of it. Just like that motivational aspect that you're talking about, the greatest success stories like come from when you were down, and come from people who like when they thought they were a failure, when they had that self-doubt, when they had that depression, they rose and came up from it. Like our strong athletic identity gives us that motivation. But you almost learned how to cope with, like, you found interests outside of racing. You found like business interests and new skills that you learned, and that helped you cope like with maybe that thought, like, oh, like, I might not get the results that I want in my career. But like, that little buffer kind of releases that stress and pressure from your shoulders, like having that, like, okay, I've learned a lot of skills in business. I've learned a lot of like things in marketing, branding, things like that. And that's what I encourage a lot of athletes to do, is like develop other interests, develop other hobbies, develop things and experiences that will lessen that buffer for when you get those negative thoughts in your sport, when you start going on that downward spiral in your sport. Because not only is it gonna improve your mental health and like your well-being, like outside of sports, it's gonna help you inside of sports. And then guess what's gonna happen? Your performance is going to be better. Yeah,
I think it kind of relieves some of the pressure off of you. But at the same time, I understand, like, I'm sure you get the argument, well, I want to be all in on my sport. I want to be 100% in, you know, and like, and I get that too. So it's, no one said this was easy.
It's different for everybody. Like a lot of people are super intense. Like everybody has a different intensity level. I was talking to Rachel, my last guest, about this too. Like some people operate at 10 where they think sport. And that makes them tick. That makes them like go. And other people need like other valves of like release, like things that they can release their pressure and their frustration on. I was probably definitely one of those people. Again, mental performance is not all black and white. Yeah. You know, there's no cookie cutter answers for everything. Mm-hmm. I think that about wraps up our time together, Amber. It was so awesome having you on. Every time I have someone on, it's such a great experience. Like each experience like tops the last one. I don't mean that as a slight to my last guest, but like I just have so fun doing these, and it's so great just to see the progression of mental health and awareness like in all sports, at all levels of sports. And I think it really goes to show like how far we've come, not only in this podcast, but in, you know, sports culture. So thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that a lot of sports, even if people don't talk about it, a lot of athletes do go through like mental health issues, and it shouldn't be like, you shouldn't be scared to talk about it because it's super normal and it's part of it. Honestly, it really is. So thank you for having me on to talk about this. I don't get to talk about the mental health side of my career very often, and I really enjoy it because it's a big part of my career and a big part of who I am.
And you're passionate about it too.
I am, yeah, because there's so much to learn, and it just, once you can work on it and figure it out and really like just put all your effort into becoming better and making sure your mental's there, life gets easier. It really does.
Awesome. There you have it, guys. Do you have anything that you would like to promote or plug? Anything that you're working on recently, like your socials? Where can people find you?
Yeah, for sure. Well, my next race is in Talladega. It's April 23rd on Fox, if you want to watch it. And
on Fox, April 23rd?
Yep.
I'll be watching my first NASCAR race ever. I'm so excited.
That's awesome. And you can follow me on my social channels, my Instagram and Twitter, and TikTok is at AmberBalkan10. And then my Facebook page is AmberBalkanRacing.
Awesome. I'll put all of those links in the description below. So if you want to follow Amber on her journey, guys, go ahead and head to that description and follow her on every single social platform. Thank you so much, Amber, for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it too.